use an example and then find a way to make that example even better. And you'll get up there too, and you'll get on the front page. And I do that with ads. You know, it's almost fun now going through Facebook. You're like, oh, look at this ad. Yo, that's sweet. Like, yeah, that's a good ad right there. I need to put this aspect of this ad into mine because it caught my attention. So you start looking at everything completely different once you run a business.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Hustle to Freedom podcast, where I'm trying to bring you guys the best guests that you might not have heard other places. There's always tons of other podcasts where you can listen to and hear big name entrepreneurs that have been crushing it their whole life and built $10 billion companies and been entrepreneurs since they were two. I'm trying to bring you guys a different side of the coin. People that have done other things most of their life and have just kind of come into this entrepreneur world, or maybe they've dabbled here and there and they've really just hit it off recently within the past, you know, 5 years or so. And hopefully I'll have an interesting guest for you guys today. I just learned some interesting fun facts about him, which I'm sure we'll get into here in a bit. But without further ado, Mr. Chris Gronkowski, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, what's up, Ryan? Thanks for having me, man.
Awesome, dude. So before we get into exactly like what your business is, were you always an entrepreneur? Did you always look at yourself that way?
Man, I don't know. I guess so. My dad grew up, my dad grew up with nothing. And I guess he kind of instilled in us like this need to earn everything we had, like really respect the value of a dollar. And I always worked since I was young, you know, paper route. We were doing umpiring at the local baseball diamond. I was working for my dad at age 15, delivering treadmills and building fitness equipment for him and driving the truck. So hard work was always in the blood. And, my dad was an entrepreneur as well. He started his own business. He's now 30 years in. He's the second largest distributor of fitness equipment. So I got to see it from day one, from that little store that was nothing, just an idea, to him working 6 years, two different jobs to get this one off the ground. And now I see him where he's at now, and he's, he's crushing it now. And it's so cool to see. And what's really cool to me is just the processes he built around it. It's been.
Did you seeing it growing up, did you think of him as an entrepreneur, or you just thought like this was his job?
Yeah, you just kind of think it's his job. You know, you don't really know the difference, especially when you're young. So, you know, you think it's cool that he owns his own business. We used to go back and like jump around in the boxes, and you know, he had spas at one point. We jump in the spas and like we're in the pool while he's trying to sell equipment. And you know, you don't know any different when you're a kid. So, it was more of just it was more of a job at first. And then as I started working for him and people were calling him the boss, I was like, oh, okay, it's pretty cool what he's got going on.
That's awesome. So when did you get your first taste of, you know, making a dollar that was a result of something that you put out into the world?
Oh, man, really probably about the age of 10 with a newspaper out, when, you know, I'm slinging on my rollerblades, slinging papers at the front doors. And, that was it. And what my parents just kept telling us as well is just save it. You know, you save that money, put it away now. And, you have it for another time when you're older, buy a house and stuff like that. So we're always raised to just, you know, earn as much as we can and save it for a rainy day.
Were you able to save it?
Yeah, for sure, man. I was. It always been like that. And I think I grinded my way through college with I'd have like $100, $150 a month to spend, and you just find ways to survive, man. That's the fun times.
Yeah. So you did the paper route, making a few bucks here and there as a young kid. What was the first thing you did that made some substantial money? Something that was, building the bank account up for real?
Man, so first thing I would probably say was online poker, man. I was like the online poker king when it was legal. You know, I'd sit in class in college and have like a crowd behind me because I'd be sitting there just playing heads up versus people. And it made good money though, man. You know, it really got me through college. I'd make a couple grand a month doing that, just on the side. And that was, to me, at least then, that was big money, man.
Yeah.
Huge money in college. After that, I mean, I was able to go into the NFL after that. And my signing bonus, I was undrafted, but my signing bonus was 10 grand. And I was like, man, this is a lot of money, right?
Rich.
Big time here. And then, I ended up starting my rookie year. And, once that money hit, that was some real money.
Yeah, that's awesome. So how long were you in the NFL?
So I played for 4 seasons, bounced around to 4 different teams as well. But it was huge for me because I was able to get pension. I was able to get retirement. I was able to stack my bank account with a good stack of money that you know, I would have never got anywhere else. So I took that money and I used it to go into business.
Yeah. So that's a good point. Cause like there's been plenty of short film documentaries and stuff like that about, you know, people in pro sports, you know, NFL included, that, you know, get the money and then, you know, 5 years later, they're broke as hell, you know, like without a skill set to really generate money outside of like, you know, playing sports. Like, did you experience that? Like, did you see that with other, your like peers in the NFL? And like, how did you make sure you didn't come to that?
Yeah. So, I mean, it's your identity, man. And these guys think that, you know, they're going to play forever. And I understand it, but me going into it, you know, I never thought I'd make it to that level. So I always had this second, plan B in mind going into it. So I did a lot better than I thought I would. I never thought I'd even make it. I sure didn't think I was going to get to 3 years, which is the requirement to get retirement and to get all the benefits. So if you don't get there, you pretty much walk away with nothing besides what you made up to that point. So, it was huge for me. But yeah, guys, they don't plan for it because they don't realize that any play could be their last play. Mm-hmm. Get drafted first round, get hurt the first week, man. And, the money stops really quick. So they're buying houses, they're buying cars, they're hooking up their boys, they're helping out their family. And, you know, the next thing you know, you're not on a team. And those bills add up really, really quick. And a lot of things, it's a pride thing too, where it's hard to go from making, you know, as a rookie, I'm making, you know, $35,000 a week playing to, making $35,000 to $50,000 a year, with a normal job. So a lot of it's a pride thing. Guys just don't want to, you know, do all the work for such little money after they were making so much. So it takes them a while to realize that they have to start somewhere. You know, same with football, you know, in football, what people don't realize is you started in high school or maybe in Pee Wee or whatever it was, and you played like 15 years for free. You basically, you were basically an intern for 15 years before you actually made it to a level that gave you some kind of income from it. Yep. And now when you're starting over, it's the same thing. And you have to look at it that way. You have to build your skill set up again, but you're restarting all over. And guys just don't see it that way. And they're not willing to put that work in again.
How did you kind of reposition your identity outside of football? So you walked away from the game after 4 years with some money in the bank, you get the pension, the retirement. But I'm sure you were still like a football player in your mind at that point, especially pretty early on. So like how did you like reset your mind to go into business?
Man, so I got really lucky with my transition. My wife, third year, third team, you know, she's getting a job in every city we went to. And she's finally after the third city, she's like, I am not going for another interview. I'm sorry, but I'm finding a way to work from home. I'm doing something else because this is just getting ridiculous. So she started a business herself, and it all started with hand painting wine glasses. She got one from her aunt. She thought it was cool. And I came home and, my oven is full of these wine glasses that she has to like cure it by heating. Right. I'm starving. I'm like, get those things out of the oven, please. And, I'm looking at it like, as long as she's staying busy, that's cool. Right. As long as she's doing something, you can't just sit at home doing nothing. And, so I kind of just like, man, I thought it would never go anywhere. Right. Next thing I know, she couldn't keep up. She was selling them so fast. She had to scale it. She started doing vinyl. She couldn't keep up with that. She had to scale it. So I looked at it and saw an opportunity. I was like, wow, this is huge. You know, how far can we push this? And did a bunch of research, started putting the money that I was making into the business, buying commercial grade laser engravers, commercial grade cutters. And we started sourcing our own product as well and finding the best stuff, the highest quality with the highest margin on it. And the next thing I knew, I was out of the league. In the first year I was out of the league, I was making more money in this business than I was playing football. So, that never happens like that. You know, guys are usually struggling, trying to find that next step. And for me, man, that definitely wasn't me either. Like I didn't tell anyone what I was even doing. You know, for 5 years.
You mean you didn't want to tell people you were baking wine glasses in the oven?
Man, like people would be like, what are you doing now? Most of it was actually, it was like wedding favors is what it ended up being. Huge market in the wedding industry. It's never going anywhere. People are going to get married forever. Every month.
I had another guy on the podcast. He did wedding. He made custom candles for people's weddings and he was crushing it with that.
Oh, for sure, man. It's never ending. And so people get married, then they get divorced and they get married again. Man, like that market is going nowhere. And it's the one time that people are going to spend whatever they want to spend. They're going to way overspend because it has to be that perfect day. So it's a great market to be in. So I saw it like that. I didn't tell anyone I was doing it, but we grew this thing all organically by just providing really good service and really good products. And at that time, to get a personalized gift, it usually took 1 to 2 weeks. And we were turning them around in 1 to 2 days, sometimes same day. And because we were doing it so fast, people would freak out and they would tell everybody. And everyone loves to procrastinate as well. So they would always come back to us for the last minute gifts. So we just organically just grew really, really fast.
Was this like with Etsy or something like that? How are you?
Yeah. So it started on Etsy. We are still one of the biggest shops on Etsy. We started back then, you could actually have multiples so that you could game the system. You could game the organic search and we'd be the top three. If you typed in like groomsman gift or bridesmaid gift, which are massive, massive searches on there, our top three, our three searches would be the top three for our three shops. So we game the system by having multiple shops, which at that time was actually perfectly fine. It was within the rules. They later on, when they got purchased, they changed it and they made us shut down one of our shops. And at one point they shut them all down because it was against their policies. And at that point we started pushing all of our eggs into a website instead and really trying to build our own customer base. So now it's pretty split at this point, but once they did that to us, we realized that, they own us, Etsy owns us. You can't live through someone else's platform. You have to also build your own customer base as well.
Yep. So you guys spun up like a Shopify store or something like that?
Absolutely. Shopify, started building out an email list, really just engaging and connecting with their audience. And Etsy has since then we had a Forbes article about it, how they kind of screwed us over and shut down our shops. And at that time we had employees, we were taking care of, multiple people, multiple families were depending on it. And we were shut down for over a week. Completely destroyed our income for that entire week. And, I did some Forbes interviewed me about it and I talked about it. And, the next thing I know, they were calling us up. Etsy was calling us and, they've done a great job of bouncing back from that. And, giving us support and actually giving us a contact to reach because it was just crazy. It was crazy that they would let a low level person handle our account and just completely shut us down.
Yeah. You see that a lot with, YouTube channels, Instagram pages, like people spend money and years building these platforms and then they shut them down and there's nobody to contact.
I saw that this morning. One of the guys I follow, since he was age of 12, it's probably been 15 years that he's been building this channel, 6 million followers, huge source of income for him his whole life. And he woke up this morning and they told him he had to delete every video on his platform today. So just just crazy to see. And it's tough. I mean, you want to use those platforms, but you have to also build your own audience at the same time.
Yep. Yep. Things you own, right? Your email list. That's what I always tell people. Like, it's good to have a podcast as well, because it's kind of like an email list. You have an RSS feed. People subscribe to that. You can take that to whatever platform you want. Like, you own that. So like things that you can build and you can own, like that's where you need to be. You need to be investing in that stuff as well. It's good to get that burst from that YouTube channel, that Etsy store, things like that, but then transition over some.
Yeah, you gotta have something coming from somewhere else as well. And we're still, Etsy's done a great job and we're really dependent on it now again. And they've been a great platform for us. So we definitely rely on them a lot at this point. And it's a better mix, but you have to have something, man, because they can control you just for one little thing that supposedly you're not doing right. They can completely shut you down and take away your service. So,
yep. And a lot of it, the scary part nowadays is it's not somebody shutting you down. It's some trip, of the algorithm, right? You somehow, especially on like Facebook and stuff like that. A lot of, for my business, I run a content marketing agency and a lot of our clients, they depend on paid ads to grow their business and their ad account will get shut down and they have no way to generate leads for their business and they have nobody to contact.
I was there, man. They just did that in December or November, where they accidentally tripped a whole bunch of accounts. Yep. And it's a policy violation. I'm like, what do you mean? I've been running this ad for like 8 months.
Yeah.
But we were there too. I was there with my business with iShaker, almost fully dependent on Facebook ads because a great, great source of income, man. They are by far our best ROAS. And I was highly dependent on it. And something like that happened, or they just slow down, or something like the election comes in and they buy up so much ad space that it's just expensive to advertise on, and you realize really quickly, like, man, I'm in a tough spot without this. I better figure out a way to diversify myself, and we did a really good job of really diversifying ourselves in 2020.
That's awesome. So you mentioned iShaker. So tell us what that is, and how do you go from doing the Etsy stuff with your wife to this product, or was it a natural evolution? Like how did it come to be?
Yeah, man. So I'm doing this business right for 5 years. My wife's passion, and I mean, I loved it, man. I love the challenge. I love growing things. It was super successful. I didn't need to do anything else. We still have it today. It's still growing. I think she has, man, it's like over 60,000 five-star reviews now on our Etsy shops, and it does well. But to me, it was, you know, I wanted to live my passion. So I love sports. I love fitness, and that's where I wanted to be. So I was at the gym one day, and it was super hot here in Texas, and I was at work. I had this cool insulated bottle, and I'm like, man, this thing's awesome. It was when like Yeti was blowing up and all that, and had that at work. And then I went to the gym, and I'm like, man, I can't bring this bottle, so I got to go grab one of those plastic ones. Grab the plastic one, fill it up, you know, pre-workout or BCAAs or whatever I was drinking. And by the time I got to the gym, it was warm, was sweating everywhere. I was making little sweat rings on the ground of the gym. And I'm like, man, this is stupid. Like, there's got to be something out there that's better than this. So I figured I'd just go home and find an insulated bottle that I could fill easily, you know, mix it, shake it, whatever. And, I'd be good to go. And at that time there was literally nothing on the market like that. So it was just one of these things where, like, you know, I just wanted to make the best bottle that I could for myself. And it wasn't something like I'm only going to use at the gym. Like, I'm a simple guy, man. I wanted one cup that I could out every day. That's all I wanted, man. Like, I didn't want five cups in the sink at the end of the day. I wanted one. And that's it. Like, I'll sit on my couch with it. I'll bring it to the pool. I'll bring it on the airplane. Like, I just want one cup that I can use all day, every day. And that was the goal.
That's awesome. So let's break that down a little bit. So you got the idea. You saw the sweat rings on the ground at the gym. You run home and you're like, all right, I can't find anything. What was step one after you couldn't find anything? Probably, obviously, big light bulb moment, like opportunity.
Yeah, absolutely.
What would you do after that?
So we were already sourcing product, you know, with my wife's company. So we were pretty good at it. So we started reaching out to some of our manufacturers and just, you know, very terrible drawings, like, hey, I'm just looking for like this insulated cup with this top on it. And so they started to put it together for us. We worked a lot with our manufacturers. We were already bringing in a lot of products. So they helped us out with it. And it was probably like 10, 20 prototypes later. And just this very, very basic cup with a shaker top on it was all it was. And you know, we tested them out because we wanted to make sure the seal was perfect. The hardest part about, you know, a metal cup is sealing it, with a good seal. So we tried out a bunch, and we wanted to make sure that wasn't an issue. And then, man, we finally pulled the trigger on it. It felt like forever because you're so excited about it. And
before we get into what happened when you pulled the trigger, I want to back up real quick. Now, a lot of people are listening. The first thing that goes through your mind when you say, you know, we were able to leverage like the sourcing and stuff, knowledge and relationships that we had from a wife's business, like, oh, well, he already had all this set up. Of course it was easy, right? So like, would you have done anything? Because you guys had to do it for the first time when you did the business with your wife. Like, what approach would you have taken if you didn't have these relationships? So somebody is like thinking of a physical product right now, like what would that look like? What would somebody do?
Man, I would hope that I could find someone, that is sourcing product and ask them what they do, you know, find someone that's successful, you know, not even in that space, but, you know, anywhere that's currently sourcing product and ask them how to start.
And so we would just like jump in the DMs of people or something. Yeah, and like, hey, like,
for sure. If you had someone in your network that was doing it, which I'm sure you do, but you're not even thinking about it. But once you start thinking about that stuff, and after I thought about it, I'm like, man, I knew so many people I could have reached out to and asked for help, but I was also so competitive and like, you know, I thought at that point I could do everything myself. So I didn't ask for help. So I tried to do it all myself, and huge mistake, because as I was about to tell you as well, you know, our first shipment came in and we ordered 10,000 bottles, and I took the first 10 out of the box, and, you know, we tested and tested and tested these things before, you know, we've pulled the trigger on the final model. And within the first 10 I pulled out, the first two were good. The third one, I took it, I filled it up, I held it upside down, and it completely just dripped all over the floor. And I was like, no way is this happening right now. So what ended up happening is that the pop tops, which we didn't have any issues with at all when we were manufacturing and doing all the tests and all the samples, somehow something happened to them where, you know, in the batch of two, one out of two of them got messed up every time. So half of the bottles were bad, but you couldn't tell which ones were bad or not. Yeah, man. So I wish I'd asked for help. I wish I'd known to bring a third party in and check and do a quality check before we ship.
Yeah, because can't you hire somebody to like go to the factory and like test this stuff out before they ship it out?
Absolutely. You could 100%. But I didn't know that because I didn't ask anyone. So, you know, you just kind of figure like, hey, they're going to check them themselves, right? And make sure they do a good job, which is never going to happen. So I learned really quickly after that, that, you know, we had to hire a third party, but that was just a huge mistake on me. You know, not doing my due diligence to really look into the whole process and figure out what I should be doing and what I shouldn't be. So, yeah, huge mistake right off the bat, man, that I paid for. And I sat up here in this room here, actually, where we were storing the product in my house, and changed out the lids for months before.
I can just like envision you like standing by the sink, like down. All right, this one drips. All right, next one.
Yeah, we didn't even, at that point, we weren't even filling them anymore. Cause then you could kind of like, they were used then, you know, if you put water in it, people are going to assume they're used. And, you know, I couldn't even go and test which ones worked and which didn't. I just had to get rid of all of them. So I had to change out every lid on every bottle. And man, I had like massive, massive forearms after these couple months ended, man, because I was just twisting off lids all day.
Nice. So you come up with this. So, all right, first, second batch, better?
Yeah. We figured it out after that, man. Like that was the last time I was ever going to let that happen. And there's been other things since then that like, you know, testing couldn't tell, where like sometimes when they cure the paint or the powder coat, if they don't do it long enough, after like a couple months, it will start peeling off. So you can do all the testing in the world. You can do like the tape test and pull it and all that. But it's just, you don't know until it happens months later sometimes. So that's happened to us as well. That's all been fixed. And you know, we're 4 years in now, so we're pretty good now, man. Like it's going to happen with mass production, but it's at such a low level now that, you know, you would never, it's not an issue anymore. And we've kind of figured out the whole process.
Nice. So you get the first batch, right? New lids on them, things like that. What do you do? Like what's step one? And you're like, ice shaker, it's here. Like how do you start to tell people about it?
Yeah, I had zero plan, man. Looking back, I'm like, man, I had no clue what I was doing. Like it's embarrassing, but it was almost like my wife's business was kind of just this natural organic growth. And, you know, it kind of just took off on its own. And this was the complete opposite. I had a decent following on social media from playing in the NFL. And I'm like, oh, I'm just going to throw a post up and like, everyone's going to buy it because it's the coolest idea ever. Right. I throw a post up. I hadn't posted in months and like, I didn't engage with any of my audience at all. And, I throw a post up and I don't sell anything, man, nothing, like complete zero off that. And, I'm like, wow, this is going to be a lot harder than I thought. So my first step was I went to Amazon and I did everything I could to organically rank on the first page. So I just literally would study everything on Amazon. I'm like, man, if this one's on the front page, I want to know why. So I'd look at everyone else's listings. I'd see what they were doing, the titles they were using, the keywords, where they were putting them, the pictures, how many pictures they had, what they looked like. And I just started just figuring out why they were at the top. And I was able to rank within the top five for shaker bottle on Amazon when I first started. So, you know, it started with, you know, second, third page, whatever it was. I'd make all my friends buy them, my family buy them, get it up there. The SEO was perfect. And, you know, once I got to the top five, I was selling like 20 to 30 bottles a day, which was huge, especially early on. And then from there, it was, you know, going to shows. I had to go to shows. Like I had to
real quick, just to interject, you know, I think what you did is something worth highlighting. It's exactly what I also did. I launched a product on Kickstarter and I did the same thing. I went to like all the somewhat similar products that did really, really well. And I just like studied every little aspect of their listing, like what was in the headline, how many pictures did it have? What did they talk about? Like, how did they present it? Like, every little thing. Sounds like you did the same thing. You just dissected the whole listing and looked for like what between the successful listings, like what correlated and what made that success.
Yeah, man. And Kickstarter is, like you said, it's not easy either. Like people think you go on Kickstarter, like people just donate you all this money. like it's completely opposite. Like you hustle, you make your listing perfect. You do the SEO like you're saying, but you also pay ads and like reach out to everybody to get there. So Kickstarter isn't just like, hey, here's all this, you know, go make a cool product. Like that's still an absolute grind to get your donations up on Kickstarter too. So
I think it applies to, you know, most aspects of business though. Most things you can go out there and look at what's working and model that on what you're trying to do. No reason to like reinvent the wheel on everything.
I 100% agree, man. And that's all my product is as well. You know, it's a successful product that I just made better. Yeah. And that's how I see everything. It's when I see people on the front page, I say, wow, look at all these amazing things they're doing, but look at what they're not. And look what I can do better and just do it better. And so exactly what you said, man, use an example and then find a way to make that example even better. And you'll get up there too. And you'll get on the front page. And I do that with ads. You know, it's almost fun now going through Facebook. You're like, oh, look at this ad. Yo, that's sweet. Like, yeah, man, good ad right there. I need to put this aspect of this ad into mine because it caught my attention. So you start looking at everything completely different once you run a business.
So I respect your time here. I know you, like you said, your kids will be home soon, but I want to ask you about when things started to take off, you're selling 20 cups a day, 30 cups a day, like what type of business did this turn into? Like what happened over the past 4 or 6 years, however long you said?
Yeah. So, we were 6 months in, we had about 80,000 in sales at that point, which is pretty good from ground up, man. Really, man, even a couple grand from ground up is like, you know, you're starting to get some momentum. So I was pretty pumped with that, but we were able to get onto ABC Shark Tank at that point. And when we got on there, that was just, you know, went from the side hustle to overnight business, man. It really is. It is what everyone says it is. It's a huge proof of concept. It's huge exposure and it's cash, man. It's a huge cash influx. So
who'd you get cash from?
So we ended up closing a deal with Mark Cuban and Alex Rodriguez, $150,000, 15% of the company. And, you know, taking that money and taking, you know, all just the money that came in from the exposure from the show airing, you know, it funded everything else. We started building out all the products, the product lines, redoing the website, everything we could possibly think of. You know, this funded it for the next year. So it's huge, man. It's huge. And what people don't realize is that, you know, your business does 20, 50, maybe 100X overnight, but so does the work, man. So, you know, I was a one man show for the most part. You know, it was a side hustle. No one was working full time on it. And the next thing you know, you know, it's a full time business and it's cranking. Everyone's calling you. Everyone's asking for wholesale accounts. And you're like, man, I don't even have a wholesale list at this point. I have one product in one color. What do you mean wholesale?
That's awesome. So it created its own set of problems just by, you know, being on there and getting all that exposure.
For sure, man. I mean, I wasn't ready for it at all. I look back, I'm like, I don't even know what, I didn't know what I was doing, man. And truthfully, I would say it probably took me 4 years to actually realize how to run a business.
Did you figure it out like trial and error? Did you seek mentors? Like how did you get to where you feel like comfortable, like growing the business?
You learn every single day. I had an amazing mentor, or the best resource in the world, who's my dad, who's been in business for over 30 years. And, you know, I wouldn't even listen to half the stuff he said, man. You know, you think you know everything. It's your business. You don't hear all the extra noise at first. And then, you know, 4 years later, I finally look back. I'm like, man, I wish I did that a little earlier. But it takes time, man. And you do have to grind it out yourself for a while. You know, I could have hired earlier, but, you know, I wouldn't have had the control. I wouldn't have known everything. I liked figuring the things out. I liked figuring the best ways to do it. I liked doing it first so that I knew and what to expect out of my employees. So you have to take time. It takes time. Everything takes time to build. It's very hard to be an overnight success, and you learn as you go. I don't regret it, but I probably wish I hired a little bit earlier and took some of the responsibility off my plate because we would have grew faster.
Yeah, I think people that don't have a business or it's not at the scale yet, like hiring is a scary thing in itself.
Well, for sure, man. Yeah, it's hard. It's super hard.
There's so much unknown and not only just the unknown and like you have to like teach this person how to do it, but then like you said earlier when you were talking about the Etsy store getting shut down, like these people become dependent on like you become like the lifeblood for the money that runs their family or helps support their family. And it's like this whole different dynamic that gets introduced to the business as well.
Absolutely, man. And you know, between the two businesses now, I mean, we're taking, you know, we're responsible for, man, so many families now. So it's a lot, man. It's a lot on your shoulders. And especially when you're the one making all the decisions. And 2020 was a big year for us. And my third kid came during 2020. And what it did was it forced me to delegate my responsibilities. And it was one of the greatest things that ever happened, man. We became a team. You know, everyone else felt like they were part of it as well. we started expanding a lot faster because, you know, there's only so much time in a day. There's only so much that I can do. So once I finally offloaded some of these big responsibilities, we grew fast too. And it's been fun to see. And now we're a team, man. And it's so funny that it took me so long because I played football and I played sports my whole life. And you know, we were in this team atmosphere. And it's like, man, once I finally hit me, I'm like, yeah, it's, you know, championships are won by good teams that have great coaches, but also have amazing players, and everyone plays a role and everyone has, you know, a very big part of it. So it's crazy that it took me almost 4 years to finally realize that and see how important it really was to have a great team and a great culture.
Yep. Yeah. That's really the only way you're going to get momentum is by having the team and the culture. Because if you have like constant turnover and average employees, like all you're going to be doing is just putting out fires all the time. You need like that A-level team.
Absolutely, man. And you get them too by training them right. It's also something I didn't do a great job of. You know, I'll give them the responsibility. I wouldn't train them well. And then I'll pull it back. And I'll be like, yo, how come they didn't know? And it's because I didn't have the manuals. I didn't have the procedures. I didn't have the answers for them. So why would they do a good job when they don't know what they're supposed to be doing? So, you know, it was a complete different mindset when we finally, you know, did it right. You know, everything was on me. I saw everything. You know, you try to blame everything on everyone else, right? At first, you're like, man, what? Yeah. This guy's an idiot. He doesn't know what he's doing. How does he not know that? And then you sit back and you put it, you know, yourself in their shoes and you say, man, if I was him, I wouldn't know it either. So I need to personally do a better job of training him, letting him know what's going on and getting everything in place so that he doesn't even have to come to me for the answer. If he needs to know, here's the document on how to do it. Here's the video.
Have you ever read Extreme Ownership by Jocko Willink?
I didn't, man, but I definitely know of Jocko. I've listened to a lot of his podcasts as well. But
yeah, the book, I mean, it's really, really good. I highly recommend it. Like, to just like sum it up, it's everything is your fault in your business and in life. Anything that happens to you is your fault. Even if it's somebody else that didn't do something, like what could you have done to like set them up to not run into that issue, which made it go wrong? It's just like, it's the most, like, as far as like business and life, it's the most like life-changing thing that I've read, because now I approach everything that like, if anything happens, it's my fault. Like, how could I have prevented that from happening?
Yep. And once you start looking at it like that, man, everything changes. Yep. You do it the right way. And that's when you explode, man. That's when everyone becomes a team. The communication is on point and everyone knows what to do, man. Because the thing that slows you down is uncertainty. And you realize that really quick. You really realize that too when you're in a pandemic and you're not in the same building anymore, and everyone is working from home. You realize, like, man, they don't know what to do. They've been asking me every question because I don't have the answers for them, or I don't have the procedures for them. So, a huge eye opener for me. And really, you know, even if I read a book 2 years ago, I wouldn't have done it. You almost have to live it to really understand it and really put it in place. So, I would tell people to read a book, but I know. If I read it, even if I told myself, my dad told me over and over and over again, like, you need to get this in place. You need this in place. I just didn't do it until I finally did, until I got to that point. And, you know, now I'm like, man, I really wish I did it earlier. So
my grandfather would call that being hard headed.
Yeah, for sure, man. But I think everyone gets there. I think everyone starts there and everyone gets to that point. Some people just get there faster than other people.
That's awesome. Well, Chris, man, I know you got a lot going on with the business and life in general, 3 kids. So I'm going to respect that time of yours. Thanks so much for coming on, talking about the journey, you know, helping your going from the NFL, the, you know, blowing up the wife's company with her and then starting Ice Shaker. Is it iceshaker.com?
Yep, iceshaker.com.
Cool. And they can pick that up on Amazon or over at iceshaker.com, I assume.
Yes, we're everywhere now. We're a GNC vitamin shop.
Oh, cool.
Fitness, we're in grocery stores. Man, Tom Brady, TB12, we have our line there, so it's pretty cool with them. And it's all over the place, but yeah, the website's always the best. We have the best selection, the newest stuff, and we also can personalize each and every bottle, so we can put logos, names, all that on it as well, which really separates our brand too.
Nice. So that'll be down in the show notes if anybody's listening. Obviously, it's a super easy URL, iceshaker.com. I don't think you need a link to click on. Just go type that in, pick you up one. I'm going to order one right when we get off here.
I appreciate it, man. You got a logo, send it over. We'll do that for you too.
There we go. Chris, man, thanks so much for coming on, dude. It's been awesome to chat with you, and we'll talk soon.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Ryan. Thanks for having me.
And that's a wrap.
I hope you all enjoyed that episode. Remember, you can find links to everything we discussed in the show notes below. And if you like this podcast and want me to keep bringing you great episodes each week, here are a few ways you can support the Hustle to Freedom podcast. First, take a screenshot of the podcast and send it to a friend who may like it. Second, I'm doing a drawing for a free copy of the Side Hustle Journal for every 5 iTunes reviews I receive. So if you want a chance to win, leave a rating and review on iTunes or Apple Podcast and send me an email at hello@gritandhustle.co. Detailed instructions on how to do this are in the show notes below. Third, take your side hustle to the next level by implementing a sales funnel to turn your passive website visitors into paying customers with ClickFunnels, the number one sales funnel software in the world. You can get a free trial by going to gritandhustle.co/profit. And fourth, if you're interested in podcasting also, which is the fastest growing content medium in the world, head over to gritandhustle.co/podcastingmadeeasy to enroll in my course now. Until next time, keep hustling, my friends.